section in. We'll be doing the next section tomorrow. We hope you join us as well.
Everyone, you're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and today I have a very compelling guest, and we are being joined by Elaine Hall, and she is a thought leader in the field of social emotional learning, SEL, the process through which children and adults acquire the end. Effectively apply the knowledge, attitudes, and skills necessary to understand and manage emotions, set and achieve positive goals, feel and show empathy for others, and establish and maintain positive relationships. The New York Times hails Elaine Hall as the child whisperer. Elaine has worked as a consultant and on-set coach for Walt Disney Studios, Universal Pictures, CBS, Sony Pictures, Nickelodeon on the hit TV series Atypical, as well as being the star of two-time Emmy Award-winning HBO film Autism, the Musical. And so we're going to be talking about many of these things, but first let me say hello and welcome, Elaine, to Heart of Mind Radio.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a real pleasure. I really only heard about your work very recently, but I was really taken by the story of how this all started for you. With your own family, with your own child. But before getting into the whole story, let me give you a chance to, you know, just take a breath maybe and tell people what you want people to know about your work, you know, the work with children, autism, the musical. There's so much here that's rich to go into.
Well, thank you, Catherine. I think the most important thing that I would love for people to know is that so often children are judged by and looked at for what they can't do rather than seen for who they are and what they can do. And I believe that empathy really begins at home. Empathy begins with a parent seeing their child and appreciating the child they were gifted rather than wanting the child to be someone other than who is right in front of them. And the work that I've been doing emphasizes that seeing a child for who they are, joining them in their world, and then helping them to uncover their true nature is what brings out that social emotional expertise in the child that they then can bring into all aspects of their life.
Well, that does make so much sense to me, and I could see, at least here in New York City where I live, that the systems for educating children, the education system, seems to be really breaking down for children who wouldn't necessarily be classified as autistic. But I do feel that many children are being classified as autistic, being diagnosed with ADD, attention deficit disorder. And it always felt to me like these problems are not stemming necessarily from the children, but stemming from a system that isn't built to really care for children in the way that they need. So maybe there's some connection to what you're talking about.
Absolutely, absolutely. Before I had my own son, who is on the autism spectrum, I worked in the film and TV business. I also had a theater company called Kids on Stage, where I used theater for self-expression, and some of the kids that were the most creative, dynamic, extraordinary children were the ones who in school were labeled with attention deficit disorder and all kinds of other things, and yet in a creative environment they could truly, truly blossom. Many of them even putting their medications aside over the summer because they were singing, dancing, acting, moving, and were able to channel all of that energy into a real positive way. So I can't agree with you more that a lot of times what is, you know, quote unquote diagnosed can really be, I don't want to say altered, but definitely channeled through means that are interesting to that child. I got into this. Well, I've been working with children my entire life, and I was working on the film The Flintstones with Pebbles and Bam Bam, and it really hit me how I wanted so much a biological child, a child of my own, because I was working with so many children, and I wasn't able to give birth biologically, so I adopted a little boy from Russia and the former Soviet Union. And when he came to me, he spun around in circles and banged his head and stared at his hand for hours at a time. And I didn't know from autism. I didn't know. This was 22 years ago, and all I knew was this was my child, and he was 2 years old, and I wanted a child so desperately, and I also wanted this beautiful baby. I connected with him on a soul level, and what I did was I joined his seemingly bizarre world. When he would spin in circles, I would spin with him, and we'd make it ring around the rosies, and when he flapped his hands, you know, as often children on the spectrum do, I'd flap with him, and we'd be birds, and we'd fly around the room together. And all I knew was when I connected with him in his world, we would bond, and we'd have this beautiful relationship, and we'd really, you know, there was eye contact, there was emotion, there was all the things that so they say are not existent in autism, which I found the opposite. I found that we had an incredible connection. And I found some doctors on the East Coast. I'm in Los Angeles, but I found some professionals on the East Coast. Dr. Stanley Greenspan, may he rest in peace. He became my mentor. And also Dr. Barry Prezant, who he is in Rhode Island. I started learning from some of the best people in the field that what I was doing intuitively was one of the best ways to reach a child on the spectrum, was to understand and learn from them why they were doing these things. And slowly my son began to emerge out of his isolation, out of his temper tantrums, and into our world, still with autism, still non-speaking, but highly communicative, emotional, happy, connected, and that began my career into the autism world.
Well, so this is pretty exciting to me because I'm feeling how you were moving on this heart space, this intuitive space, and being able to function out of love and determination to connect with and to be with your child. To me, is to me that's like the magic of life and what miracles grow from. But it's really interesting that you were able to take this into your professional world as well, and working with these children. So tell me a little bit about the film Autism the Musical. How did that come about, and how has it impacted the world of how the way people view autism?
Thank you. Yes, it was a very much heartfelt determination, and as a result of that, things in my external world sort of crumbled. I wasn't able to work full time because I really needed to be with my son. My marriage fell apart because my focus was so focused, I guess. And I needed to work, basically. And I didn't know what to do. So I prayed. And I asked, what am I supposed to do now? How am I supposed to make a living? And a voice, a strong voice in my heart, started talking to me and saying, teach other children what you're doing. Teach other children, teach other people what you're doing with your son. And then I started saying it that the voice became so loud that other people were hearing it. And a dear friend, Michelle Wolf, said to me, you know, Elaine, you should start a theater company for kids, with disabilities. It's like, I'm looking at her and thinking, how did she hear my inner voice? And, as you know, when we have an intention, right, that the universe supports it. And
absolutely. Can't run away from it.
You can't, exactly. And as it happened, on a Monday, Michelle told me about a grant to write, and she's like, I'll help you. You need to do it. You need to write a grant and do this with other children. And I'm like, yeah, I'm too busy. On Tuesday, I went to court. I lost all of my spousal support, and my child support was minimal, reduced to nothing. Uh-huh. And then it was like, I've got to work. And on Wednesday, I called her, Michelle, and I said, what was that grant you were talking about? And on Thursday, I wrote it. And it was due Friday. And I had never written a grant before in my life. I just channeled it. And fortunately, got a grant and from actually a Jewish Community Foundation of Los Angeles, and started what's now known as the Miracle Project, which is a theater and film program for all abilities. I created a whole training program based on the methods that I was using with my son and all the best practices of autism, which is understanding and meeting the child where they are, really best practices for any child. Understanding, meeting the child where they are, having the person working with autism, not changing the person with autism, but changing themselves. We started with meditation, with grounding, with owning our own sensory differences, really being present, being fully present, and allowing the child in front of us to reveal themselves. So I created a whole training program and developed this theater program for kids of all abilities, with autism, with ADHD, with Tourette's. I say any kid that got kicked out of any program. And we started and wrote and performed an original musical in front of one of the best theaters in Los Angeles. And a group of filmmakers saw what I was doing and said, we want to document this. So the following year, a whole new group of students, this time they wanted only individuals with autism, and I trained a whole new staff, and we joined the Children's World, and they documented it, And this little teeny film was purchased by Bunim Murray Productions, a big production company, and they it screened at the Tribeca Film Festival, started winning all kinds of awards, and then aired on HBO, and then aired on the Oprah Network. And next thing you know, then it was brought to, I was invited to the United Nations to screen at the United Nations, and the production company gifted 100 DVDs to countries all over the world. And what I've learned since then is we've changed the way the world perceives autism, because there are kids like my son, severely autistic, and then all on the spectrum, you know, from highly verbal to my son non-speaking, who are singing, dancing, acting, and starring in original musical.
Wow. So that is extremely a profound thing to be able to represent to the world. But can you go into a little bit more what it represented for the children themselves? What kind of an impact does this have on their lives before engaging in this process of that you teach, and how they're able to move on with their lives afterwards?
Oh, what a beautiful question. So each child with autism is an individual. You meet one person with autism, you meet one person with autism. So everyone's had a, individually have been impacted by their experiences with the Miracle Project. It's called the Miracle Project, by the way, the Miracle Project. So, so I can cite a couple of examples. But as a group overall, everyone that walks in the room become loved, accepted, and appreciated for exactly who they are. And as a result of that, you can imagine whenever we walk into a room and people are judging us, we feel anxious, we feel tight in our bodies, we don't really want to express who we are. But if we walk in that same room and people are open and receptive and curious, our own boundaries start to fall. And that's what happens as soon as a child walks into our space. They're met with love, appreciation, and curiosity, and anxiety. Anxiety is very common in individuals on the spectrum, and also we have a lot of children with anxiety disorder, and the anxiety starts to lessen, and over time, this starts to generalize into the rest of their world, where they're less anxious, and they feel better about themselves. And I think one of the primary things that happens is isolation is removed. They start seeing kids like themselves, and parents are able to talk about their children. They talk about how wonderful their child is, not only the challenges, friendships, socialization, bonding, creativity, all the things that are sometimes seen as not possible for individuals on the spectrum become not just possible, but paramount. And socially, it becomes a beautiful social environment. The other individual things, we had one young girl who, when she first came to us, she cried all the time. She had so much anxiety. Her mom had been diagnosed with cancer. She was in a lot of fear. And she also, her autism, the sensory piece was really overwhelming her, and she just cried and screamed. And we joined her. We just sat when she needed to sit and basically hid when she needed to hide. And over time, we noticed how much she loved to sing. So we would give her a couple notes to sing. And for our first show, she sang maybe, five or eight lines and sang it. And gradually over the years, she would sing a little bit more and a little bit more until, as she says, one day opera came out of her throat.
Wow.
And today she is an opera singer. She's performed at the Pantages Theater with Jack Black and Stephen Stills and Neil Young. I took her to China, and she's performed to over 500 people. She performed at the United Nations, and she's been on TV, the TV show Parenthood. She's got a reoccurring role in a show that starts to air next season, TV. And more than anything, she's happy. She has so many friends. She's the most social person I've ever known. And that's Spencer Hart. So she's quite extraordinary. Another young man, Kobe Bird, started with us, very shy, withdrawn, had been bullied terribly in school, tremendous anxiety, and through the Miracle Project, and he, we saw that there was this, I just kept noticing there was a real seriousness about acting, something, even as shy as he was, you could tell that it meant a lot to him, and we really nurtured him, and he was the first, the youngest autistic person to portray a person with autism on the TV show The Good Doctor. And you can find Kobe Bird, and he was on the TV show, had a starring role, a guest starring role on the TV show The Good Doctor. So those are, you know, some of the bold transformations. But I think some of the other things that are even more profound is, you know, my son is non-speaking, and he's a young adult who has a job at an organic garden. He has many friends. He uses his iPhone to communicate, and he types, and he uses a system on his iPhone. And he's just super, super happy. And people talk about mm-hmm. him as being calm and just so such a joy to be around. And this was a young man who literally used to throw things off our walls. We couldn't have any photos on the walls or pictures or, you know, anything. And he's just evolved. His name is Neil Katz. Some children say their first words on our stages. Friendships. And there's just so many things that have evolved. For each child, it's different.
I can imagine that it would be. I really wanted people to understand through your work how profound a difference we as adults and teachers and caregivers can make in a child's life or a young adult's life or even each other's life. Because as you were speaking about coming into that room of unconditional love and acceptance, I was like, well, I want that. And so... so it seems like these children are teaching us something about ourselves as a society and as a culture that maybe, you know, there's a message that can be learned from this that we should all be treating each other a lot better than we do, for sure. So I really do appreciate that. If you have some more time, I'd like to go into some of your other topics so that we can give people a sense of what they can do if they're working with or have an autistic or attention deficit disorder child, how they might approach their own situations. So I was wondering if you could give a little few tips on what people can generally do if they wanted to really start doing this right now, how they could begin to communicate better with their children who are sensitive in any number of ways.
Absolutely, for sure. Everything you're saying just resonates. And it all starts with ourselves. I have a book called The 7 Keys to Unlock Autism. And that in that book, we talk about how it all starts with ourselves. So that sense of unconditional love and acceptance first has to begin with ourselves. We need to look inside and say, what are the things that I am judging myself on? What are the things that I am not accepting and loving about myself? And it starts right there. It starts with us accepting our body image, accepting the fact that we may not be great in math. accepting, you know, and really loving ourselves profoundly. Because I really feel with highly sensitive children that, you know, most individuals on the spectrum are highly sensitive, as well as our kids that learn differently, they're highly sensitive. If the environment becomes loving externally when it's first internally accepting, and our kids feel it. So the first step we can do is just look in the mirror and start really loving ourselves. From there, building that muscle of self-acceptance, appreciation, and love, we can easily look at a child in 30 seconds. I do a lot of, I speak around the world. I'm invited to keynote and present. I also present at faith-based organizations, and we talk about inclusion. And they say, the biggest thing they always say is, well, it's too expensive to be inclusive. So I teach them how to be inclusive in 60 seconds. The first 30 seconds, we look at each other with judgment, fear, and separateness. And then the second 30 seconds, we look at each other with curiosity, appreciation, and love. And immediately, we've created an inclusive environment. So when our child is in our presence, we can do the exact same thing. Be curious. Why are they doing? Why are they doing what they're doing? Be curious. Look at them as not as a separate individual that is doing weird things, but be understanding. Listen. And specifically, I had a mom after she took one of my workshops, and she emailed me afterwards, and she said, whenever I drive my son to school, I listen to my own music, and he doesn't like my music. But I'm really adamant. I'm driving. I want to listen to my own music. And one day, I don't know, after your workshop, I tuned in to a station that I know he liked. Next thing you know, he and I were singing a song from a radio station that he enjoyed, and then he started talking to me about what was going on in school. She said that had never happened before. By joining his world, that simple, turning the radio station, they created a bond. So those are just very, very simple, tangible things that you can do that can change the dynamic of your relationship with your child. Instead of judging them for what they're not able to do, when they walk in the door, find one thing that you appreciate that they've done that day. They say, whatever you water grows. So start watering what your child is doing well rather than negating and looking at what they're doing wrong.
Wow. So, you know, these are really such basic human principles that I'm beginning to suspect all of humanity needs these teachings. Maybe we're all autistic, or we're the ones in a way that are damaged in these children who are coming in, these highly sensitive children. You know, are maybe coming in with a level of purity that they can't tolerate the sort of insensitivity of our world. It just seems that they're bringing a gift with them.
Catherine, I so echo what you're saying. In my book, Now I See the Moon, which is my story of how I joined my son and what we did together and his growth. In Now I See the Moon, I share that perhaps our highly sensitive children are simply canaries in the coal mine. We so-called typical people try to make sense out of loud noise, chaos, overstimulation, you know, we try to make sense out of this crazy world where our friends on the spectrum recoil from it. And when I was able to recoil from the craziness of the world, entering into the world of autism, my world became richer, more beautiful, and kinder. And I agree with you so profoundly that there are so many gifts in the autism world. I have very dear friends on the spectrum, and they are just some of the most extraordinary human beings I've had the privilege of knowing. Myself, I've always been highly, highly sensitive and negated it. And as a result, tried to be someone rather than who I really am. And by my work in this field, and I work a lot with, as I said, all abilities, highly sensitive children and teens and young adults now, I am a much richer, stronger human being. And I think you're right. We can all be enriched by the gifts of the highly sensitive.
I really feel that. And I think you're right that there's a certain way in which people who might be engaged in the arts and other forms of communication may have some flavor of that sensitivity that we're seeing in a more extreme way of the way children are coming into the world now. I was wondering if you gave any thought to the other kinds of whatever might be the causes of the autism spectrum in terms of even like with your child adopting him from the Soviet Union. Like, I understand that there's like a, if a child is in an environment where they're not getting any kind of attention for the first developmental days of their life, that it can somehow have an impact, such as we're talking about with autism, because the children are just not stimulated at a time when they need it developmentally. But also I understand that, you know, children develop problems at different ages and stages of their childhood. So I was wondering if you had given any thought to the kind of environment outside of that family attention that might be creating or contributing to the problem of autism.
So I don't know if it's contributing to the problem of autism. I think there's lots of studies now that there are many things that can enhance a child's ability to grow and be nurtured even with their autism. My son had no oxygen to his brain at birth. He was in an institution for the, you know, the first 2 years of his life. And as you said, you know, institutionalized living can definitely cause, he also had attachment disorder as well as autism. And, you know, those things definitely contributed. But his biology, his neurosystem, he's autistic. And so very often, you know, people on the spectrum, their neurology is just, they're wired differently. And
well, that's really important,
so
because
yes,
I didn't understand
yes.
that to be the case. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a neurological difference. The brain is wired differently. And then exactly what you said, the environment then impacts how the wiring of the brain is then able to be in the world. And that's why, you know, the system that I work out of, that I created, can really be helpful in that you really tune into how is that child wired, and let's move with that, I think what happens is, you know, if a child is highly sensitive, as a baby, if a baby is highly, highly sensitive to stimulus and to touch, right? And so let's say the baby doesn't want to be touched. Well, a young mom can feel that their child is rejecting them. And that can cause the mom to retreat, right? But if, I mean, there's diagnosis now of autism in infants. But if the mom learns that no, that baby is just highly sensitive to your touch, but continue smiling, continue loving, continue surrounding that child with an energy of love, then it's going to help the mom feel great, and that baby's neurosystem is going to be able to feel that love, you know. And I also know that it often as children on the spectrum grow, and they do retreat from the world, a mother or father can get frustrated and feel that they've done something wrong, and that child picks that up. So by learning that child's just, their brain is just wired differently, and they're allowing them that there's a wonderful book called Uniquely Human by Barry Prezant. He's my mentor, and you know, he talks a lot about that, you know, just allowing that child to be the unique individual that they are, that then that in itself, loving that child from wherever, whoever they are, allows for that neurology to be in this world, and then finding the proper resources, the proper interventions that are right for that child's spirit and soul. And today there are such phenomenal interventions that are out there: speech therapy, occupational therapy, relationship-based interventions. There's so many positive things that can be worked with a child on the spectrum, a young child on the spectrum, that allows them to grow into who they are. So it's both. It's the neurology and the environment around that neurology.
Yeah, because the environment is in part what helps to shape the neurology, I presume you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That you know, like my son is, you know, definitely wired differently, and what we are able to provide for him, he's calm and centered and happy and funny and smart and, you know, all of those things. And, I see families who are, and he just walked downstairs and sign languaging for an apple. So I think I'm going to give him, he uses a sign. But then, you know, I see families who are gifted with a highly, you know, typical, smart, bright kids, and the family is judging them for, you know, they're not, you know, perhaps that they're highly creative, and they wanted someone who was more practical, and so they're judging their child, and that child creates their own anxiety from not being able to live up to their own, you know, parents' expectations. So I think we have to, whatever child we're gifted, we can be grateful, not just grateful, but curious as to who this individual is.
I could see that. It's such a beautiful thing. And what this really confirms for me also is that, as you were talking about the creating this loving environment for the child, it's a way of really showing people just how powerful that love and care and attention really is, so much so that it can help to reconnect these children back, I guess, through themselves and back into the world. It seems very amazing that love has the capacity to do these things. I mean, it's not amazing to me, but there's a way in which it feels amazing and miraculous that love can be so powerful in the world. And we don't often have a chance to actually see the power that it has.
Yes, I get goosebumps when you say that. You say that so beautifully. Yes, love has the power to heal and transform, and it is an energy. I've seen it in my own life with my son. I've seen it with myself. I'm remarried. My husband, Jeff Reimer, he brought so much love into our lives. And I felt my own biochemistry heal just from love. And I write about our meeting in my book. Now I see the moon and how that just the presence of a loving individual, I experienced it. And then I see it every day at the Miracle Project. People walk into our room. We have volunteers and what we call co-actors, which are peer role models, who say that being at the Miracle Project is the best day of their week because the love is palpable. You can feel it. It's an energy. And we have kids who are the presidents of their school, you know, student government. And the most popular kids in school who say that when they come to the Miracle Project, it's the one place all week they can be themselves. And and become friends with our students. We work out of the Wallace Annenberg Center for the Performing Arts in Beverly Hills, and as well as replicating the program now all over the world. But at the Wallace, it's a professional theater, and so we have actors, professional actors and directors and music directors who come into our space and work with our kids, and they too feel that energy like you were talking about, that sense of love.
That's amazing. So you seem to have done many things, very illustrious career in one way, if you look at it on paper. But I mean, and that's a beautiful thing. But there's also this, like you said, this energy that has woven through your life in such a way that you've been able to open up this window for so many. And when I see something like that, for me, it means that I'm engaging with a person who is really walking the calling, walking their own gift in terms of maybe purpose or inspiration. And as we roll towards the end of our time, what has, if you can connect to that inspiration for you, that soul space for you, that you're doing this work in the world, and what it means for you personally as a spiritual being?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I feel blessed to have found my purpose and my passion. I feel that everything I've done, all the challenges I've had in my life have led me to this work. I grew up and was bullied myself. I'm very tiny. I was teased. I was a different religious background than every kid in my neighborhood, and always felt kind of alone and isolated, highly sensitive, very spiritual. I always talked to the moon every night. I came from a religious family, but I had a more spiritual connection, very mystical, felt different than everybody else, lived in my own imagination, lived in my stories, in my head. And that, you know, my parents were incredibly nurturing and guided me into the creative world, because the fields, just as a young child, because they saw that I lived in my imagination. My mother always had me play with a girl who lived across the street who had cerebral palsy and was severely disabled, and that was my favorite day of the week, was playing with her. So I see, you know, sort of how the work that I do started with who I was as a small child, and I feel tremendously blessed that my own life's challenges and eccentricities have brought me to be able to give back and follow. I live my life by following my inner voice and learning. And I kind of feel that we're put on the planet to live, grow, and love. And because fortunately the work that I do, I'm able to be to do that all day long and then train others how to listen and tune into their higher self and their higher purpose and be the best that they can be. So thank you for giving me that opportunity. I've never been asked that before, and I really thank you for the opportunity to look into that.
Well, you're welcome. And I think that people are really going to want to connect to what you're doing and to your work. So maybe you could remind us of how people can connect. I guess they could go to the Miracle Project if they want to find out more about that. And I looked up that site. It's themiracleproject.org, I believe.
Yes, but themiracleproject.org.
Yes,
and to connect to me, you can, I'm at Elaine@themiracleproject.org. And I do offer keynote presentations and trainings and workshops and in my work. And I also offer consultations to parents. I do Skype and phone consults to parents and basically reparenting yourself so that you can be a better parent for your child, and how to turn overwhelm into extraordinary ability. So I do those consultations as well as trainings and speaking. And then also my book, Now I See the Moon. I think you can glean a lot of what we've just talked about from that book.
Yeah, Now I See the Moon. And this is the book about your life story.
Yes. And it goes into every single thing that I did with my son.
Okay. Well, that's very good. And it's also the book, The 7 Keys to Unlock Autism.
Yes, that's a real specific technique book. And I would highly recommend that, especially for parents of elementary and middle school students.
Okay, so this is actually really almost a textbook for people who are working with children?
Yeah, it's a textbook. It's a textbook. It's actually used at Brown University, and among others. But it is a textbook, and what I've had parents tell me is that they've used that book. They get the book, they read it, and then they bring it to the teachers. Because what it does, because so often teachers say, oh, we just don't have the time, we don't have the resources, and it gives very specific 7 keys. I actually do a lot of training in schools. I'm hired by the school boards to do these 7 keys training. But parents can get the book and bring it to their teachers and realize how cost-effective it is to follow these 7 keys and how their child can really prosper in that environment. With 7 keys to unlock autism. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, I think that's a resource that many people may want to look into, as well as Now I See the Moon, A Mother, A Son, and The Miracle of Autism, I believe is the full name of the book.
Yes.
And there's a beautiful picture of, is this your son on the cover?
That's Neil on the cover, one of his volunteers. Did that picture.
It's a beautiful book. It's a beautiful book. And I'm very much impressed by all the work that you've done. And it's inspiring because we all are looking for ways to make it through our challenges. and also to express our greatest gifts. And it seems you've found a way to do both. So that's beautiful.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I also invite people to our plays, we write original musicals, and we've got an anti-bullying play called The Intimidation Game that we're going to be making accessible to schools. And so if you're interested in that play, we figure rather than doing a play like Annie, why not do a play like The Intimidation Game, which is a highly entertaining musical, but it's about how to not stop bullying, but empower those around us to stand up. And it's all done through music. So that's another way their schools can actually start putting on this play, The Intimidation Game. So people can contact me about that as well.
And they should do that through the email you gave?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's excellent. And I'd actually, maybe I'll send you an email as well, because I'd like to have look more into this work and sort of see where it is, how it's spread out. Is it actually in New York City? Is it in the middle America? To just see how well, I'm interested to see how well this is progressing in terms of helping people on all different levels in terms of where they live, what their economics might be. I mean, these basic principles need to be accessible. What you're teaching needs to be accessible to all of our children without regard, I think, to, you know, what particular neighborhoods they might be living in. So I think it's very powerful information, and I thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, it's so true. And it's low cost. That's the whole idea, too, is it can be done. You know, love costs nothing, right?
There you go. It costs nothing. However, just like you were in that place where you had to go and seek that funding in order to have the room to be able to create that space, I think too often that level of understanding doesn't happen. And what I'm seeing in schools in my neighborhood is that children are not really being provided for. There's a different thing happening there where there's a lot of requirements for testing, and it's just a different thing happening with the privatization of schools. And I feel that what you're doing is what every child needs. So I'm really happy to
thank
you.
So
I we're just about out of time, unless you have any last thoughts or you'd wish to share with people.
Oh, thank you. I was just to follow up on what you're saying. That's the importance of social emotional learning, is that, you know, we need to get away from that testing model and really into developing that child that's right there in front of us and with social emotional learning. And I think that's critical. And I agree with you. The funding needs to be there and needs to be present. And I'm calling out all philanthropists that are listening right now, that really that's social emotional learning is the that's what our world needs as much as science and everything else. And I just want to say that. And then I always love ending with my son's quote and about him. And what he taught me is to listen to the child that does not speak. They may say it takes a village to raise a child. And I like to say it takes a person with a disability to raise the consciousness of a village.
Wow. That is so true. And I guess here in this Western world, we are that village. So thank you so much for joining me again. I have been speaking with Elaine Hall, and she is the author of Now I See the Moon, A Mother, A Son, and the Miracle of Autism. Bye-bye for now.